It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Matthew Ingram joins Jeff Jarvis and me as we talk about the latest news from Google. We'll talk a little bit about the Chromecast, Google Now, some cool new features, and what happened, yes, at GigaOM. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly, CacheFly.com.
It's time for Twit's annual audience survey, and we want to hear from you. Please visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It only takes a few minutes, and your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. We thank you so much for your continued support. twit.tv/survey. This is Twig This Week in Google, episode 292, recorded Wednesday, March 18th, 2015, Eating Chrome. This Week in Google is brought to you by SmartThings. SmartThings lets you monitor, control, and automate your home from wherever you are using your smartphone. Right now, SmartThings is offering This Week in Google listeners 10% off any home security or solution kit, and get free shipping in the U.S. when you go to smartthings.com/twit and use the offer code TWIT at checkout. And by LegalZoom. It's National Start Your Business Month at LegalZoom, and the best time to create the business you've always dreamed of. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but they can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TWIG in the referral box to save even more. And by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, or creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit Lynda.com/TWIG. That's LYNDA.com/TWIG. It's time for This Week in Google, the show that is all about the cloud, the Googleverse, and all of the above. Anything we want to talk about, because when you have Professor Jeff Jarvis here, the City University of New York, Dr. Jarvis, to friends.
No doctor. not even master.
D-O-C-K-T-E-R. Master Jarvis. Google.com/+Jeff Jarvis. He's at BuzzMachine.com, the author of many a great book, including Geeks Bearing Gifts, his latest. Good to see you, Jeff, at home, not in the soggy office.
Good to see you. I was going to do a unboxing of my Pixel, but I saw you did that with yours. So,
well, you can unbox it later if you want.
Oh, it's already open.
Have you used it?
Not much. Just it's open, but it's fast.
I'm reviewing it for Before You Buy tomorrow. In fact, I think I have some other things to show you. We'll talk in a bit.
Oh, okay.
But let me tell you, having used it for almost a week now, I love it.
Really?
I am converted.
Wow.
We'll save that.
Okay,
save
we
that.
Will.
Because we have a great guest here today.
Important guest to get to.
Very important. I'm so glad to welcome Matthew Ingram back. MatthewIngram.com, of course, a many-time contributor to the show and all of our shows. We love having him on. And had a front row seat at the desolation of GigaOM. But you're doing okay.
I'm doing okay. Yep. Still here.
Well, we just think the world of you. We think actually the world of everybody at GigaOM. That was a terrible loss. We talked about
Thanks.
It. It happened while we were doing the show, I think.
Wow.
I think so, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
Anyway, great to have you, Matthew, and just want to have your continued contribution. You're not going back to the print.
No, I don't think so.
That's what everybody wrote about you, was how Matthew Ingram boldly made the decision to go from a print newspaper, the Globe and Mail, right?
Yeah.
Which is Toronto's greatest newspaper. Actually, Canada's greatest newspaper, but the Toronto Metro, one of two. And Toronto has two papers.
Three.
It's got three, yeah.
How'd that happen? Anyway.
I just love ego.
Yeah. The Globe and Mail, love reading it, but you decided to go digital. When did you do that? Mm.
2010, January 2010.
Was there an internet then?
There was, yeah.
And so GigaOM was your first gig, so to speak, digital.
It was, yeah. I worked for the digital sort of unit of the newspaper,
right?
for a few years, and then then made the jump to digital only.
But not back to no ink anymore.
I'm sort of reviewing a number of options, but I would not go back to just to just print. No.
Have you you all stayed in touch with one another, Kevin and Janko?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. In fact, we still talk daily. We use Slack.
Oh, that's neat.
We just started using that a few months ago, and we sort of got used to just talking all the time. So we're still doing it. You know, everybody's trying to figure out what they're doing next, and so it's kind of a support group at the moment. Well,
I was also impressed. I think it was Stacey who, as soon as the announcement happened, immediately was tweeting the great talent at GigaHome. And it's really, you know, it's impressive to see a boss look out for her chicks and look out for her colleagues before you know, whining about yourself. And
Stacey Higginbotham.
That was Laura Owen, I think.
Laura Owen, yeah, because Stacey's one of the
That's right, one of the chicks. Yes, that's the bad word to say. I meant chicklings. I meant little okay. birds of a duck.
No,
I
didn't mean one of the baby ducks. One of the baby ducks is what he's saying.
Yes.
No, we're a pretty tight group.
I'm glad to hear that. Actually, that bodes well, frankly, in my experience. You know, Tech TV, the dissolution of Tech TV, same thing. We all were tight, and we've all since helped each other, and you know, created our own ventures. And so that worked out very well, I think. Having a Tech TV mafia, you don't have the GigaHome mafia.
Yeah, the one, you know, it's one of the things I'm going to miss. Obviously, the money is another thing, but definitely going to miss, you know, that group.
Right.
I think we all liked each other, respected each other, worked pretty well together, enjoyed it.
That's really honestly why Twit started, is I wanted to keep talking to my buddies. Seriously, I missed the conversations we would have.
Good motivation.
Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about, I have actually not one, but two new Chromebooks. And Jeff, time for me to eat crow.
Whoa. Chrome. History book.
Yeah. Well, you remember I was pretty dismissive.
You've been nice. We made a shtick of it.
I've been dismissive of the Chromebook. And a lot of people still are. They say, oh, it's just a browser pretending to be a computer. But a few things have happened. One is obvious. It's become more and more capable over time, and there's more and more Chrome extensions. There's now Chrome apps, which act pretty... In fact, Chrome OS has become, in many respects, a full-blown OS. You've got apps, you've got a toolbar and all that. But what was missing, I think, was decent hardware, to be frank. Most Chromebooks are $200, $300. They're junky. They're netbooks. They're tinny.
Yeah.
So I now, having played with the new Google... Let me log into this before you show it.
I have mine set up so I can log in with my watch.
That is awesome. If you have Android 5 on your device, your watch will do it?
I mean my phone.
God, if the watch did it, that'd be really awesome. But if you have Android 5 on your smartphone, it'll just log in automatically. The screen is spectacular. As good as any Retina Air. It's weird, 3.2 still. In fact, it's in every way that's the same except Type-C connector now, which I really like. And there's two of them, so you could put power on either side, video on either side, USB still there. It still has an SD card slot, which is kind of a bad tease because I can't really do anything with it. I shoot raw, so it doesn't. There's no point in putting a card in there. Although it does mount flush, which means you could use this as extra storage. You put a 128 gig SD card in there. That's like a second hard drive, if you wish. You
know, I tried to go to Best Buy and Apple to buy a C to HDMI connector, and you can't get them yet.
Not yet.
Really?
Not yet.
You can get it from Google, but you can't get it in store.
Yeah, you can get them online. And Apple sells a $79 dongle, which really is overpriced. So there's a couple of needed accessories. That's certainly one, is cheap Type-C interfaces. And I'm sure MonoPrice will do them because it's not proprietary. It's not the MagSafe adapter. It's everybody, you know, Intel, Google, and Apple all involved in Type-C. It's a standard. So as far as I can tell, I've been doing a lot of inquiries. This is a standard. Power and everything. You could, for instance, have a Type-C power adapter from another manufacturer, plug it in, and it would work fine. Even if the wattage isn't the same, it will trickle charge it or fast charge it or not use all the power available. It'll work. The other accessory that's needed is Steve Gibson came up with this. And if anybody wants to steal this idea and do a Kickstarter, I encourage you. He says you need a Type-C condom because there is this issue that Type-C is not just power, it's full USB data. So the bad USB hack, which means that you can use this to modify the firmware on USB drives and make them very potent malware transportation devices, is a potential problem here. Somebody could put a charging station in a coffee shop that would infect. Now, the good news about Chromebooks is you can't. There's nothing really to infect.
In fact, right.
These are very, very secure. But nonetheless, and certainly for the MacBook, you'll want this. It would be simple enough to make a Type-C male to female cable that just carried the power lines, not any of the data.
I see.
And you'd carry that with you. You'd use that all the time. Then you could safely connect to anything. So that's a good market. And they shouldn't be more than a buck or two. There's no special stuff in that.
I'm figuring $59 on from Apple before you know it.
Yeah. By the way, it's March 18th today, Jason. Just not March
9th. good catch.
I am really impressed with the keyboard, the screen, the trackpad. Yes. Everything works very well.
The hinge is more solid. The hinge was good before, but it's really good now.
And you don't mind the screen that it's 3.2?
It's weird, but you get used to it. And
No, it's fine for me.
One thing that has really improved in the Chromebook is the ability to handle different size screens. And I'll use that with this. I'll use this as an example. This came out today. This is a new Acer Chromebook with a 15-inch screen. And one of the things that's made it hard for me to recommend Chromebooks to, it's the natural users of Chromebooks are older people, right, who really don't need anything more complex than a browser and email program things and stuff like that. Chromebooks are perfect for them. They just can't get in trouble with them. But the screens have been so crappy and small, it's hard to recommend it. Even I have a hard time reading it. Can you hide the screen real quickly while I log into my Google account on this? This one, I'll show you what I've done. I've made the, because you have 15 inches now, you can make this very easy to look at because you now have two things you can change. You can change the standard browser zoom size and you can change the standard text size.
So it's not the small type problem of the other HD Chromebook?
This is so easy to use. You see how big that I can make it even bigger. See how big it is? And on a 15-inch screen, which, you know, it's 1080p screen, potentially these could be very small. But they're actually quite usable, I think. So I think Google has solved a lot of the kind of little things.
How much is that Acer?
$300.
Amazing.
So I've customized the fonts to be very large, but you can even go more in here. You can change the kind of font. There's a lot of information there you can use to your heart's content to make it legible. And then you can set the standard page zoom, which I've set to 150% on here, just kind of as example. Now, some of the icons on the Chrome, the user interface, are still small, but usable. And it's not touch. It's not nearly as good a screen as the Pixel. The thing that's great about the Pixel is it feels so fast, so fluid, so easy. And this isn't even the LS version. Kind of qualms about using a Chromebook go away. It feels like it's a real computer.
Mm-hmm. Speed is already impressive. I got the LS.
You did?
Oh, yeah.
Both? Okay, so the Acer
Boost. It's my only machine. I might as well, you know, it's what I live with.
Right,
so.
Why not? $200, $300 more? The Acer boots in 7 seconds. This thing, let me just do a reboot. It feels like it's almost instant, right?
Well, what's so great too, you mentioned this last week too, is the setup is nothing. Every time I've changed machines, it was a day of doing this, I forgot that. And you turn it on and give it about 4 minutes and it's done.
Yeah. So let's see how fast it takes to boot. I just shut it off. Just tap 1001, 1002, 1003, 1004. Did I tap it?
No, it didn't shut off yet. It takes a second to shut off.
Okay. Is it off? How do you even know? No light on the front. 1001, 1002, 1003. I love the screen backup. 1000. That's it. Like almost instant, like 4 or 5 seconds.
Yeah.
This is kind of fun, too. The rainbow little doohickey here. You double tap it, and you can see how much battery life is left, which is great. So I'm 100% charged. And the battery life, you haven't experienced this yet, Jeff. 9 to 12 hours, easy.
Oh, really? So it's legit.
Oh, it's legit. And same thing with this Acer because it's so big. It's all battery in the
inside. Right.
That is fabulous.
These are heavier than Airs. That's the one thing. They're not. They're not. You know, skinny.
But it feels. But you know, it feels like something. It's a utilitarian.
Yeah.
Air.
It's solid.
Square edges. You know, it's very googly. Googly. I love it. I'm very happy with it. Wow. I think you're going to like yours a lot. I mean, I'm curious what you say with the ludicrous speed version.
There's nothing.
Go ahead, Beth.
Sorry. There's nothing you want to do on a computer that you can't do on there?
Yeah, there's a few things. I like to do computer programming. I can't do most kinds of computer programming. You can do App Inventor and stuff like that, web-based programming, but I can't do the stuff I want.
And you could dual boot. You can dual boot to, not dual boot, but dual build to.
I played with Linux on this. I decided not to do that. The one thing I have done, I have SSH on here. And so the one thing I have done is I can SSH to my Linux box and have a Linux command line easily.
Right.
So,
No, Matthew, the only thing is you don't edit video on it.
Can't video or photo. I mean, you can, but
photo, you can. I mean, you don't do what Leo does with his raw files on photo. But for what I do for, you know, let me get a photo for a Medium post, easy as pie.
You can also use remote desktop. So I'm going to remote desktop into my Mac Pro at home. And don't look. You have a security pin, which I've just entered. And now I can use my computer at home.
Is it 1, 2, 3, 4?
Yeah. Shoot, you saw. So I'm having some screen issues, but this is probably because I have my computer at home set a ridiculous screen resolution. But basically, this is that's my computer at home I'm looking at. This screen is my Mac Pro. So you can, in fact, I guess, do what you want. But I think if you had a – I think what you need is a desktop that can do all that stuff, and then this could be your notebook.
I mean, listen, I think when you get – if I had Google Fiber – at full speed, you start to see doing video remotely.
Yeah. There is a remote video plug-in, you know, video editing plug. We Video will do video editing.
And listen, it's always taken time to download the video to the machine. You just upload it to the cloud instead, and as long as you can get response there, and the rendering is going to be faster up in the cloud than it is going to be on a local machine.
As more stuff uses HTML5, as Chrome gets more powerful, I love this little app drawer. And by the way, you get this on Windows and Mac now, too, where you have what look, I mean, as for all intents and purposes, this looks like the taskbar on Windows with all my icons here.
Wash your mouth out.
Well, I mean, it's, or okay, the dock. You have a start button where you have, you know, these are the apps I have. I can swipe through them, which is great. And these, you know, it's pretty much everything I want. The speakers on this are pretty decent still. I think the old Pixel had very good speakers. These are still pretty good here.
And there is a lot of, you know, image editing and even sort of minor video editing that you can do in the cloud.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like my TweetDeck app is great, you know.
Anyway, you get...
Just assumed it would be all about the bass.
Oh, I can play that.
No, that's fine.
I hate that song. So I think in general, this is like 90% of what most people do with their computing anyway.
Yeah.
100% in some cases.
You know, I was thinking. Yeah, you go ahead.
I'm trying to talk students into doing it. You know, those who need to do video editing, no, not yet. But everybody else, it's far cheaper. And I was talking, when I went last week to Madrid, I went to Prisa, the giant media company there with El País, and they have an education arm, and they're doing fascinating things in Brazil with a company that basically handles everything for a school from curriculum through technology. And they, of course, because this is for well-to-do students and or families, they have iPads, and I'm yelling at them saying, no, get Chromebooks. So much better.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense for students for sure. And I think for older folks as well. I'm thinking about my mom, you know. Absolutely. I got her a shitty netbook, and it's garbage. And I'm thinking, do I get her a tablet? Should I get her a Chromebook? You know, I want something that's she can do things with, but that's not going to cause a lot of problems where I have to do tech support.
I think one of the things that's kind of intriguing is – Maybe we aren't paying enough for these, though. Maybe this Pixel has shown me kind of, it really is a better experience with a
hardware. Well, this is the argument. Where is the $600?
Well, I think the $999 one, I think this is the one people should get. I know it sounds expensive, but this is going to last you for years.
Well, Leo, now that I have a Chromebook with Lightning Speed, I think I should abandon Skype and go back to
there's to one thing you think. Can't do, although I imagine that's just around the corner at some point.
Yeah, I hope so.
That's kind of, I scooped my Before You Buy review, but that's the basically right there, the review. I'm impressed. I am really impressed.
Yay.
And I feel like it should be, people should think about getting it. I know $999, it sounds like, geez, I don't know. But I've always said that there's a false economy to getting cheap hardware.
Is it that much better than that Acer you showed?
Yeah.
It is?
Well, God, that's a good question. The Acer is a pretty good choice if you want a big screen. I mean, what's nice, that's the other thing that's nice, is there's an ecosystem starting to evolve where they're not all the same.
Mm-hmm.
The Acer is the first real, I mean, the 15-inch, that's the first 15-inch screen. It really looks nice.
And the Toshiba is nice, except that it's HD and the type is just too small for
right.
my old eyes.
Right.
What I want, what I think I said in the show before, is what I really want is I want to go back to the original days of Dell where you could truly customize your own machine.
Yeah.
If I could get a machine mm-hmm. from Dell with a touch screen and LTE and lots of memory and so on, I think you could put together the ultimate machine, which wouldn't probably cost $999, but would probably cost about $800, $750, and it'd be a great machine and would have everything I want.
That's I was going to say, not having LTE, I think you mentioned that, Jeff. That's
torturing me.
And it's strange. Why not? Why wouldn't it have it?
My guess is 85%, they say, of the users of Chromebooks are Googlers, and they live enveloped by a warm cloud of Wi-Fi and through their entire right. lives.
Most of us are now. Don't do,
well,
many of us.
I go into offices. You know, I was at Montclair State Wi-Fi. Yesterday, and their tech department does... You know, makes you give blood tests to get on and won't put a Chromebook
that's
on.
That's silly.
So, you know, the LTE just connects and that's it. And I'm on. No problem. But not anymore. Now right. I'm going to have to pull out a little box. And who's your advertiser now for Wi-Fi connectivity? Wi-Fi? Don't you have one?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Didn't you get some new thing, Jeff?
Karma.
You mentioned.
I did Karma. Which the advantage of the Karma is you pay for... the gigs, no expiry.
Right.
So if you want to buy 10 gigs, you buy 10 gigs. When you use it up, you use it up. And I think it's $14 a gig, which is a little high. But if you realize nothing ever expires, you're not buying a monthly, that makes more sense. It's on Sprint.
Is it good coverage?
It's Sprint. Mm-hmm. Tingle. Tingle? Ting. Thank you.
Ting. Tingle's that other service that you use.
Yeah, right. With chicks. Yeah. So Ting, I don't know whether they have... Now you can buy SIMs from them and do no longer just CDMA, but I don't know if they have just Wi-Fi, just data accounts.
Why, if Google's going to do a wireless... MVNO anyway, why wouldn't they? Maybe, you know what? Maybe that's what's going on is they're not going to put LTE in here until they have their own LTE card to put in.
Right.
Oh, baby.
That would be the way to do it, right? And then you're getting the best of Sprint / T-Mobile / Wi-Fi for very little money. Why that? Maybe that's what we're waiting for. Maybe they are going to, have they said, no, we're not going to do LTE?
Reporters asked and said, you know, it wasn't like they were saying, as you thought last week, oh, it'll come out in 2 weeks. You know, apparently not.
That I believe, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if they did something. Or maybe they'll do a MiFi card with their new MVNO.
Because if you have a laptop that only works on the internet, then you kind of need to give people some way to always have the internet.
Right.
Yep.
This works offline in a lot of respects, but it is, of course, better with online.
Can I tweet offline?
No. Do you need to tweet offline? Do you really want to
get right on a plane? It's fine.
Do you want to tweet from your flight? You can't meerkat from it either.
What?
What? What good is that? You could have Google Hangouts.
Mm.
That's so funny because meerkat really isn't anything new at all, is it? There's just
no. No, not in any way.
In any
just
way.
Just the name.
Well, and the easy, I guess, onboarding. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Concept is not new.
No, and it's like oh, we've never seen anything like this. It's so strange. All right, let's take a break. Matthew Ingram is here. So great to have him. You want to point people to your website, MatthewIngram.com, best place to go?
Sure. I'm currently reconfiguring it. So, again, it's all under construction. But, yeah, please drop by.
You could do what Jason Snell did and just create your own thing. You know, we're so close. You could do people love you. You could do a Patreon. You could figure something out and do it. Are you tempted at all to go your own way?
I am. I definitely am. I mean, I'm tempted. I wrote one of the last things I wrote was about Ben Thompson, who runs a blog called Stratechery.
Yeah.
Super smart guy, way smarter than I am. So that model might not work for me, but the fact that he's got thousands of subscribers and he's making a living and he works on his own time and does what he wants and writes a newsletter. And I mean, that kind of thing is super appealing. But I just don't know, you know, I have certain income requirements. You know, I have kids and university and a wife and so on. I can't just sort of take 6 months off and see if I can make money on sort of crowdsourcing. But I mean, I've written enough about it. It's hugely appealing.
Yeah, I mean, Ben is like Horace Dedieu. He's an analyst and so this stuff feels like analytics. And you could see how people would say, okay, I'm going to pay for that because that helps me make money. Pure journalism, I know, Jeff, you talk about this all the time. Maybe that's a little harder to put behind a paywall, but there must be other ways.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
There must be other ways.
I'm tempted to say you can do research reports, but...
Yeah, that's
you can.
And conferences. Yeah, that's the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the ticket. Well, one thing Ben does, and Horace, and all these people, is they appear on Twit regularly. And we are very happy to promote whatever you're doing, Matthew.
Great. Well, I certainly appreciate being on.
Yeah.
Love talking.
Oh, we love having you on. Yeah. Our show today brought to you by Smart Things. Smart people brought to you by Smart Things. I like it. Smart Things is smart. If you're trying to automate your home, it's a solution that kind of everybody's been looking for the longest time, which is how do I get all the different things, smart things in my home, to talk to one another? It started with a Kickstarter project for the Smart Things Hub, and it has exploded to really incorporate to encompass everything you're doing in your home, whether it's security, whether it's just convenience, whether it's monitoring. Smart Things plays well with others, as they say. The Hub interfaces to their iOS or Android app and then interfaces to your Eon Labs micro dimmer and key fob, your 2-gig programmable thermostat, your Belkin Wemo, Dropcam Pro, your Nest, your Ecobee, your Ecolink door and window sensor, your Everspring door and window. I'm just going through the alphabet here. Everything, your Sonos speakers, your Hue lights. And they can all work together to make your house a smart home. The best way to start is with a Smart Things kit. Once you get the kit, you're going to solve a particular problem. They have solution kits for lighting automation, for instance. That's what we're looking at right now. Or security. We're going to get you 10% off that kit, the first kit, and free shipping in the U.S. All you have to do is go to smartthings.com/twit. You'll get the Hub. You'll get additional sensors. And then kind of the sky's the limit. You now imagine using your smartphone app to say good night and the lights turn off, the thermostat adjusts, the doors lock. I do that. I still do that by hand every night. It's a lot. It takes a while. Be so cool. Just press one button. Set your lamps to brighten every morning at sunrise or keep your home protected with home security, motion detection, water detection. Your speakers could broadcast barking dogs when there's motion detected outside the house. Or just a welcome home song when your children return. I love it, and I think you will too. I want you to go to smartthings.com/twit. Save 10% off any home security or solution kit, free shipping in the U.S. Smart Things was named Editor's Choice at CES 2015. I'm not surprised. Smartthings.com/twit. Give it a try. Today you'll like it. Google I.O. registration opened yesterday. Are you going, Jeff?
I don't know. I put in the request. We shall see.
We got the same thing last. They did this last year, too. And we have about 10 people who want to go.
Yeah, I shouldn't take a spot for one of your guys who's...
Well, we don't have to worry about Gina anymore. She's on her own.
Right, right, right.
I think Jason Howell...
Well, if you've already heard, maybe I haven't. Maybe I'm
not. I think Robert... It was weird. Robert Ballester was reaching out, Father Robert, because he wanted to get lineup programmers for our Coding 101 show. And Google responded to him and said, yes, you have two for the entire organization. Thank God Robert is an honest priest. And he sent it on to me and said, that's up to you to decide. Because I'm sure Robert would like to go, but so would Mike Elgin, so would you, so would Jason, so would a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go. I'm going to stay here because I think they're going to stream the keynote as they usually do. And we'll do our usual, you know, streaming coverage. Registration goes till 5 o'clock tomorrow, 5 o'clock Pacific tomorrow, March 19th. And it's going to be another lottery. You'll have to apply when you get the invitation. It's not free. $900 for an attendee, $300 if you're a student or a teacher. Everybody has the same chance. Google I.O. is a lot of fun. May 28th and 29th at Moscone West.
How do they decide?
I imagine they have
a lottery.
I think they have a computer that'll do. You know what? They have not said. They have not said because
we know what we need to know.
You wonder if there's maybe more than just a lottery involved.
I wonder that black box algorithm.
Yeah. Well, we look at your page rank. I don't know how
your
they do it.
Score.
Yeah. I don't think they say it's random.
They don't. Then it's not.
I that's a good question.
They said that starting last year, they started to say, it's randomly selected, but I don't know how close to the truth that necessarily
random-ish.
Yes.
Well, random it does light. Say, we'll randomly select applicants from among all the qualified applications. Qualified might be the word.
Right.
That is the little, not randomly. Well, so what they're going to do is go through a list and qualify people and then randomly select. Presumably, they'll want you to be a developer or somebody who can bring something to the table, I would guess. But I don't know. And they don't say what qualified means.
Right.
The order in which applications received has no bearing. You need to sign into Google, so it has to be your, you know, real Google account. Should I apply? I don't want to go, so I shouldn't apply. So, Jason, here's the problem. We need to tell them... before they tell us. Well, I will figure it out. Jeff, you applied.
No, I applied through press. I'm not a developer, so.
Right. Submit a request, fill out this form. That's probably what happened. Robert probably filled out that form.
Press are free, right? As usual.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you still get the goodies. I wonder if, I guess they'll be giving away a Pixel, maybe?
So you can't keep.
Yeah, right.
We should get bonus points for having bought them.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It'll be fun this year. I mean, we heard about Lollipop last year. I don't know if what we'll hear about what's because
I think you're also going to see Sundar's. I mean, Sundar was the star of the show last year, but he's really been in charge of much.
Right. All right. Well, there you go. Google I/O coming up. Interesting Medium post about by Astro Teller. Astro, I didn't know, for instance, is not his real name. it's Eric. He's the head of Google X, the Moonshots. This is part of the new back channel, which is Stephen Levy's little corner of Medium. This is the journalistic corner of Medium.
Mm-hmm. One of them, yeah.
It's
Stephen's doing a great job. It's his Wired magazine. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is basically a transcript of his speech, of Astro Teller's speech at South By yesterday. So some very interesting stuff in here, if you haven't read it. They made a ECG vest. That was his first startup in 1999. And it was really cool. In fact, I'm pretty sure this is the body media vest we wore. I wore this, or somebody wore this during the screensavers at Tech TV. So that you could see in real time heart rate, blood pressure, electrocardiogram as the host is hosting the show. I'm pretty sure, unless I had a bad nightmare, I'm pretty sure we did that. He said the problem is we got a bunch of older people in, people who would theoretically be wearing this vest, and they 65 to 80, and they said they hated it. And we said, well, would you wear it if it would save your life? I don't know. Maybe. Well, okay, what if we made it so you could fly? I guess. Sometimes. Maybe.
But old people are like that.
They're not going to say yes. No.
What if you could fly there for free? I don't know.
I'm happy right here.
trying to get my parents a tablet. I missed my show. More than my life was worth. Yeah.
Oh, are we going to be like that, Jeff?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Matthew says yes.
Oh, yes. No, I'm fine. I'm good.
I'm good.
I like the old phones.
When will that happen?
Before you realize it.
Yeah. We harden in our ways, I guess. I'm starting to get
virtual
reality.
I don't
understand why I need a new computer. Chrome is just fine. Yeah. Has been for years.
Yeah. I feel it's already happening to me. I don't want to go out anymore. So Google X, one of the first projects, he says, was called Genie. Was to fix the way buildings are designed and built by building an expert system, a software genie. Did you ever hear about this? I never heard about this. Worked on it for 18 months, spun it out to a standalone business where it has been growing and thriving for the last 2.5 years. Okay. Then they did Flux. Oh, no, the company's now called Flux. Huh. Okay.
I think Loon is one of my favorites, not just because of the name, because it's a Canadian bird, but just the idea. I remember when they first announced it, I thought it was April Fool's.
Right, which is
like
great.
It sounded satirical. It was so loony. You know, man, we're going to float balloons around the world and give people internet. I'm like, sure.
Yeah, right. Project Wing, the self-flying delivery drone. The Loon balloons actually are going to, I think they're going to be real, aren't they?
Yeah, oh, yeah. No, they are. Yeah. They are. They totally are.
How about this? Makani, an airborne wind turbine, an energy kite.
Cool idea.
Isn't that cool?
Very.
The higher up you go, there's the faster and more consistent the wind is. So if you put the turbines up in the air.
And the speed, stop right there. Where was it? The power of the wind goes up with the cube of the wind speed.
Oh, that's interesting. So that makes huge difference. But so does the weight of the turbine.
Oh, that's not
good. So that's the key, right, is to make something light. The Makani energy kites are 1% as much as a standard, you know, turbine on a tower. And the center of the virtual circle it draws in the sky is at 250 meters, where the winds are stronger and more consistent, and as you said, considerably more powerful.
The thing that I thought was most interesting was some of the places where he talks about how they failed,
right,
and sort of why they failed. And like Google Glass, you know, got too much attention and was sort of seen as a finished product when it wasn't, which was kind of my sense of why it didn't maybe do as well. But the other one was, I think it was Project Loon. He said they massively underestimated the difficulty of keeping the balloons aloft. Like, we're off by a factor of 10 or 100. So not just a little.
An order of magnitude wrong.
Yeah, I find it impressive that he would even admit that, you know.
Yeah, except
that. They were
off
by that much.
That failure was followed by a success in which they figured out how to make them stay up much longer than they had thought. So they so that's the challenge, right? You take the failure and you make it into something. He says, we've mostly fixed this problem, but at the time it was quite stressful. Now, thankfully, balloons stay up for 6 months at a time, well beyond the 3 months we need for a viable service. There's the little self-driving car.
And his point about that is similar to, you know, all the great ideas when you're coming up with the concept don't, well, amount to a hill of beans, but a small hill of beans. It's not until you actually test the product in real world conditions, you start to suddenly realize the things you got wrong or the things that you didn't anticipate would be a huge deal.
He also says as they get better at it, that's a problem because it's failure that teaches them. So the longer the amount of time between our failures, the harder it is for us to improve. That was an interesting insight.
They're not failing enough.
It's not. It's too good.
Yeah, you guys are too good. Stop succeeding.
So I think that's
this whole idea of failure is just so fascinating. I had a long conversation with a German or an Austrian journalist today, who was going on with me and talking to me after I had done my attack on Der Spiegel we talked about 2 weeks ago. And you know, I keep on saying that the Europeans have to have more willingness to develop in public, which means fail in public. And that's a precursor. And yes, we in America fetishize failure. And I always make that joke, but I'm not so sure that's true now. I think that it's just a method of being open and learning in public and improving something in public. And you look at his talk about saying, oh, yeah, we learned a big lesson about privacy in Google Glass. People didn't like not knowing the picture was taken. Da, 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 da. So, you know, it wasn't that, oh, my God, they've done something horrible and it proves they're evil. No, they learned. Learning is okay. Mm-hmm.
So here's a good one they learned with the self-driving cars. He said, you know, we knew that if the car drove itself, people would, you know, maybe not pay as much attention as they ought to. You know, they'll say, oh, no, I'm nervous. I'm going to keep my hands. He said, as soon as we started doing stuff, people were doing horrendous things. They were crawling into the back seat. It was just horrible. So he said, we realized that the only way to make that this would work is to make it truly self-driving. So we took the steering wheel out. They said, if it doesn't go from point A to point B without any human intervention, it's no good. If it requires any human intervention, it's going to be a horrific failure because humans, as soon as they think the car's got it covered, just go, okay, see ya.
There's no backup system.
It's like they are not the backup system and don't count on them. He says people already do stupid things like texting when they're supposed to be 100% in control. So imagine what happens when they think the car's got it covered. It isn't pretty. So that actually is a good explanation. I was wondering, why are you taking the steering wheel out? Isn't that a comfort factor for humans that there's a brake, there's a pedal, there's something I can do if the machine fails? Great.
That's really interesting. The human engineering part of a non-human device. That's kind of fun.
You probably always do, don't you? You always have to take humans are the thing that screws everything up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I forget who said it, but my dad, who was in the Air Force, used to love the line, no battle plan ever survived contact with the enemy.
Yep.
So you can have all the great ideas and plans you want, but people will find a way to do something you didn't expect.
U.S. DeWiz in our chat room says, well, why does it have rear view mirrors then if the humans aren't necessary? Well, those aren't really rear view mirrors. Those are cameras. The little wings sticking out. They're not for you. I want this car, and I will come to work each and every day in it. And I don't care even Buckminster Fuller, the great Bucky, created something called, remember the Dymaxion car? He said, there's crazy. We're making cars that are not aerodynamic. He designed it like a teardrop. It had some very odd features. It was three-wheeler, I believe. And it never got anywhere because somebody got killed in it. It had a fatal accident.
I did wonder about the car. This car is four wheels in those specific positions. Right. Is that the best?
Do you need that
model for a car, or is it just because that's what we expect it to look like?
I think you have to, as you said, human factors still come into play.
As long as it has lots of cup holders, I think it'll be pretty successful.
Yeah. Without a cup holder, it's not a car.
The president of or CEO of Ford at one point, I think it was, said they can talk about all the features they want in their new cars, and all people care about is they want more cup holders.
Yep. Well, that was the great thing about the Homer Simpson's car. It had tons of cup holders.
Yep, it's important.
And shag carpeting.
So, Bon Appetit had an article on the history of the car cup holder.
Oh, really?
Just in case.
Hello. Really?
I don't know why it's in Bon Appetit. Ever since George Washington crossed the Delaware to go sign the lease on his new pickup truck, President's Day has been associated with getting a good deal on a car. And while some people buy a car based on gas mileage or sporty looks, we all know the most important part of a vehicle is its cup holder. Look at that. snack tray for car from Modern Mechanics.
Snack tray.
Holds a Coke bottle. Real demand for the cup holder didn't pick up into the 50s when drive-ins and drive-through windows became mainstays of American eating. The very earliest evidence of a complete cup holding comes from a 50s newspaper clipping that describes that snack tray for car that hangs from dashboard.
When I was in high school, we still had an A&W that would bring the trays out and hang them on your side of the
door. Oh, high school. We had one in Petaluma until a few years ago.
Really?
Then the waitresses were on roller skates. Yes.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I liked going there.
It's the best thing ever. Yeah. You roll your window down. She takes your
skates.
Don't
even have to get out of the car.
No, it's so great. The best beverage security system of the era belonged to the 1950 Cadillac Eldorado Brougham. Plenty of ultra-luxurious limousines had built-in bars, but the Brougham, how do you say that? Brougham was the first. Brougham was the first to come with a magnetized glove compartment door and a set of four metal tumblers.
Oh, Jesus.
Perfect for keeping your cognac stable while you're passing the jitney on the way to the Hamptons. Patents for the 70s for a more advanced version of Clyde Morgan's pull-out tray. But customers looking for a car with a built-in cup holder were stuck in the wilderness until 1983 when Chrysler invented the minivan. That is the first if you're watching the video, that is the first minivan. The Dodge Caravan and the Plymouth Voyager, same car, different names.
Your sex appeal.
Wow, that's hot. They had two cup holders sunk into the plastic of the dashboard. But it would take another decade for that to become ubiquitous.
That shows what's so wrong about Detroit. If they had listened to the public.
Yeah.
Yeah. We all would have told them cup holders and
Why
plugs for our
so
Walkmen.
You know what happened? In 1994, a 79-year-old woman, Stella Liebeck, sued McDonald's after spilling a 180-degree coffee in her lap in a stationary car. She got $2.7 million.
That's a famous case.
Very famous.
That judgment was actually reversed.
You're right. She only got $640,000 on appeal. The case became fodder for endless Leno monologues and a national argument about tort reform, but also a strong argument for the industry-wide adoption of the cup holder. If the car she'd been sitting in, her grandson's Ford Probe, had even one single cup holder, the whole ideal might have been avoided. So there you have it, 1984.
Drama.
The very first cup holder for reals in the 1984 Chrysler Dodge Caravan and Plymouth Voyager. Boy, that's an ugly-ass car. Even an ugly color, like kind of dopey brown.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's ugly.
We had a caravan.
Did you?
We had a caravan with the faux woody look on the side.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Pure sex appeal.
I'm not at all surprised.
All right. I don't know. How do we go to... That's what I love about this show. It's about Google the cloud and cup holders or whatever the hell.
When you're up in the cloud, you have low oxygen.
Does your Chromebook have cup holders?
No. Very disappointing, I might add. You know what I'm excited about? Google has now an API for Google Now, or is going to.
That's a big deal.
Could be big.
That's
a big deal.
This is the article from The Next Web. Martin Bryant writing, Google Now will one day be able to work with information from all the apps you use. I didn't know there was a pilot program with 40 third-party services already.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that either.
But this
Wired
is, again, from South... Yeah, this is from South By. Yeah, Wired had a great article. This is from South By. Aparna Chennapragada, director of... I actually came really close to getting to nail on that. Aparna Chennapragada, director of product management for Google Now, gave an interesting insight at South By at a MarketingLand Denny Sullivan session at South By. When asked by an attendee how Google Now will handle competing data from rival apps, she said individual user app usage patterns would help guide what data should be shown.
I think it's smart. I mean, I remember when I first saw Google Now and I thought, what if this could show me not just things that are in my Google Calendar, but any type of information, news, weather, sports, all sorts of things. It's a potential pipeline for all the information you need to know right now on your phone. That's huge.
One of the things she raises is the notion of, you could have a card at the amusement park that would then tell you, hey, the ride, is ready for you. Your auction, and here's some from the Wired slide. Your auction ends in 1 hour and 22 minutes, or a QR code from Walgreens. Because you're near Walgreens, here's some coupons or balance rewards points. This is great stuff. The Danny Sullivan panel was cut short at South by a false fire alarm.
Oh, shoot.
Which happened to me, by the way. I went to a Mark Cuban talk at South by a few years ago.
Really?
And Mark was being his typical nasty self. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the fire alarm went off, and I took that as an excuse to get the hell out of there and never went back.
we had one go off at a GigaHome event, too. Huh. At UCSF.
I think
someone from TechCrunch pulled it.
There's some renegade, competitor going around pulling fire alarms. So there'll be an API. That's pretty exciting.
What's the difference then between now and notifications on your phone? Don't they merge?
I get now notifications, don't I? I think I do. Yeah, I do.
You know what I mean?
It's push versus pull is what it is. So notifications are pushed to you and get your attention. But I love the idea of saying, well, let me go look at my Now dashboard and seeing what's going on. And so that's pulled, right? Except it's pushed to the pull.
So here's the other question. For the 40 that are doing this, is that opt-in now for us with Now?
Yeah, you have to have the app.
Install the app.
Installed. Right. Okay. And then it taps into that. And, you can, as you can do with any Google Now cards, also, you can kind of say, don't turn show me any more of this.
How do I turn that on? Like, my beloved Waze, I don't think it comes into Now for me, but I use Waze every day.
Is Waze one of the 40? I honestly don't know.
It is that. Mm. So do I turn on Now for an app?
Well, that's what she's saying. She's saying that Google looks at your usage to decide what to put in Now.
See, this is where I do have a problem. Everybody else raves about Now, and I like Now, but I don't get a lot Now.
Right. You need more.
Yeah,
Google is also doing surveys to identify what people want. She says, we also use personal experiences. A visit to Disneyland inspired her to get the team working on support for theme park ride queue times.
I will say I used Google Now a lot more when I was traveling. So I was in a different country. I didn't know where I was going. I needed flight information. I needed traffic information. If I'm just going from my house to the shopping mall and back or to pick up my daughter, Google Now is pretty useless because it's not going to tell me anything I don't already know.
Right. It's also, are you interested in this new location? Right. The 7-Eleven 5 miles away?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. But when I was in Italy, it was a lifesaver. I mean, I think I told you guys, I slid it up by mistake and it said, hey, your flight's delayed and there's traffic on the highway heading to the airport. And I'm like, thank you so much for telling me that. That is like the most important information I found out today.
Actually, I'm looking at my now, and I've got calendar appointments. I've got news stories that are referred to searches I've made in the past, and I've got places nearby. But I just got one that was kind of interesting. It said, I see there's something going on at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Do you want me to add that to your calendar? And I guess it saw it in my email, but it wasn't a confirmation because I am flying to Vegas at 1 o'clock tomorrow. So I said, yeah. So it actually added something to my – I love the parking location. That's nice. Knows where I parked.
Yeah, I get that one.
My AT&T bill is due tomorrow.
See, I don't get any of this stuff.
Mine says, tell Jeff that Google Now is really useful.
what mine does all the time? Mine just gives me, honest to God, I get this all the time. It gives me stories about Chromebook and Edward Snowden.
Well, you got to do more searches on Google, I guess.
And smartphones and tablets.
Yeah.
The Snowden thing, the NSA is pushing.
Yeah. We know we're watching you. You might as well watch back. Stories to read. That's it. That's all I ever get. And I get the, you know, the card that says it's, you know, it's some horrible amount of time to get home for you, you poor schmuck.
Take a helicopter.
If only.
If only. So is it you that that put this Nick Bilton story in the rundown?
Yeah.
The health concerns in wearable tech. Oh,
Jesus, it's driving me nutty. Well, I put the two of them together because you have, on the one hand, Google just got a patent for curing cancer with a watch. Then you have Nick Bilton, who's turned into the whiny nanny of the technology world. And this story really bothers me because it's really fluffing around the facts, because it's saying, well, cell is bad for you. But most smartwatches don't have cell. They only have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. And by the way, we all put Bluetooth in our ears thinking it's safer than putting the phone by our ear. So now suddenly having Bluetooth in your watch is going to give you cancer and kill you?
Well, and so there is no evidence that cell phone radiation is bad for you.
That too. So he tries to use that. It's a real straw man with a match.
He's quoting Dr. Joseph Mercola, who is not a credible.
Yeah, this piece, and you know, Nick, I like Nick. Nick's a nice guy.
Oh, we love him.
But he's tried too hard to go from future man to Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
And
I live in the future, and now I really hate it.
I don't like it very much.
He wrote this book was I Live in the Future. Now I don't like it so much.
Yeah, so he's trying to shift off. And I wonder if this
is the Times telling him we need an anti-editor. An anti-technology editor.
But don't do it. Don't do it.
No.
Because this is not, this fluffs by, and I know what we're going to hear. The New York Times said these smartwatches are going to be bad for you. You're going to get cancer. They're going to kill you.
Right.
Well, you know, my watch has Wi-Fi. I mean, does it have Wi-Fi? It has Bluetooth in it.
It does have Wi-Fi. That's something we learned, by the way, which is kind of interesting. The Apple Watch, Apple was made a big deal about how we not only use Bluetooth, but we use Wi-Fi, so that as long as you're within your Wi-Fi network, your Apple Watch can talk to your Apple phone. It needs an Apple phone so that it can do its thing. So you can leave your phone in your bedroom and go throughout your house. And as long as you're still, or conversely, in your office and go throughout your office, as long as you're still on the same Wi-Fi network, it'll work. And that was like, wow, that's great. And then somebody, I guess Google, said, oh, yeah, Android Wear watches all have Wi-Fi in it, too. We're going to have to turn that on with firmware soon. I didn't know this had Wi-Fi in it. Yeah. What?
Might as well put it in. It's a tiny chip.
I guess it's a cheap chip, and they can just stick it in there. I think it's very intriguing. It seems like almost an intentional effort to have hidden features that you slowly enable. Like the battery life has gotten better and better and better and better.
Yeah.
That's actually one of the things I'm fascinated with, whether it's Tesla cars or, you know, there are more and more things that are effectively getting smarter and better over firmware updates.
Right.
That come over the air. So instead of having to take your car into the shop, Tesla can actually change the height of the chassis of your car with a firmware update.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Well, everything we have, I guess, is kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Very intriguing.
Wasn't there supposed to be a Tesla announcement today or something that Musk said, I'm going to solve all your problems with battery worry? You see that story?
Not yet.
I remember him mentioning that.
Why don't you find it and take a break while you look? How about that?
All right.
We're talking Google in the cloud and all that stuff and cup holders with Matthew Ingram, late of GigaOhm, now at MatthewIngram.com, at Matthew I on Twitter. Do you do Meerkat?
I do not. I have not Meerkatted.
Okay. Just going to give you a chance if you do.
Okay.
It's ridiculous. Here we are in a live streaming studio. I do more streaming hours of video than any human alive. And half my staff is now Meerkatting everything. Jeff Needles is
people,
like number five on the
people were watching Jimmy
Fallon.
Fallon, yeah, rehearsing.
I had 1,000 people watching me Meerkat, and I think I broke it because it stopped at $9.99 and never went beyond that. In fact, then stopped you. So what are you number three? Who is number one? Mashable, Jimmy Fallon, Jeff Needles, ladies and gentlemen.
Jesus.
He wasn't even at South by Southwest.
What?
He found his thing. He found his calling.
You know what he does? He leaves it on all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a market for that. That's not true. There's a person who
does that. What happens on Needle Vision?
What happens on Needle Vision? We talk. He interviews people. It's crazy.
You know the best thing about Meerkat?
What?
The name.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Ustream whatever. Name. But meerkat?
Ustream sounds like a urinary tract infection. Meerkat, a cute little fuzzy animal.
Don't cross your meerkats.
Mm-mm.
Getting really used to the meerkat posture. You know someone's meerkatting when you walk around the corner and someone's standing there like this.
I'm meerkatting.
Actually, no, sorry. You got to actually see the camera.
I'm meerkatting.
And they're walking around like this everywhere. I'm meerkatting. Like, oh, meerkatting.
We actually had to formulate company rules about meerkatting.
Yeah.
You can't just meerkat people.
Well, you because know. People are going around. There's screens open with financials on it. There's whiteboards with show ideas on it. You can't just go around all the time. Meerkatting
in the bathroom
with the,
or whatever.
Yeah, you have to have meerkat rules. Pretty soon you'll go to the gym, it'll say no cell phones and no meerkatting.
Leave your meerkat at the door.
Leave your meerkat at that Periscope. Twitter's slow-to-emerge competition is now starting to... Kevin Rose tweeted today, I saw it. It's amazing. So,
see, dumb name. Meerkat is way better.
Way better than Periscope. You think that's it? It's just the name?
Well, I think it helps. Definitely helps.
Had Google put something like Meerkat on Google Glass, would it have been as big? No.
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 It would have caused war in Europe.
I think it's hard for Google or Facebook to do those kinds of things because they're these giant entities that everybody kind of slightly mistrusts.
Right.
Whereas if it's just a guy, hey, I came up with this new thing. It's cool. You should use it. People are like, all right, I'm in.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the New York Police Department and their new spot shotter system. This is a good one. Thank you, chat room. But first, a word from LegalZoom.com. You may be thinking right about now, you know, I need a law firm. Actually, LegalZoom is not a law firm. Actually, better, they've built a network of trusted attorneys to provide the guidance you need at your specific situation at a very affordable price. And during National Start Your Business Month, LegalZoom is offering an attorney consultation for only $50. If you're thinking about starting a business, now is a great time. It's National Start Your Business Month. And at LegalZoom.com, it's never been easier. When we started our business, LLC, LegalZoom, it was very affordable. In fact, 10 years later, we're still using it. For more than 10 years, LegalZoom has helped 1 million business owners just like me. Protect your family, protect your business, trademarks, patents, corporations, and, yes, that network of trusted attorneys that provides the answers to questions you might have. If you're unsure about the best way to start, or if you already run a business and you need some advice, this offer is such a good deal. Get legal advice for your business, no further obligation, for one low-time cost, $50. You cannot get on the phone with my attorney for less than $450. Go to LegalZoom.com today and find out more. Attorney consultations are provided by independent attorneys. They're available in most states. Get the legal help you need for your business at LegalZoom.com and do use the offer code TWIG in the referral box, and you will save even more. LegalZoom.com. I can't recommend them more highly. Matthew Ingram, Jeff Jarvis, Leo Laporte, This Week in Google. Police officers, thank you, chat room, for this story from MSNBC. Police officers in New York City have now a new technology called Spot Shotter. You might be happy to hear this, Jeff. With it, they can detect gunshots in real time.
It's not that new. What's new in this story is that they're installing it in new neighborhoods, and they are finding there are more gunshots than they knew.
The $1.5 million system uses 300 sensors to triangulate the location of a gunshot to within 25 meters of where the bullet was fired within seconds. It sends a notification to an operator who reviews the audio file to determine if it actually was a gunshot or maybe fireworks or an engine backfire. The system then forwards an alert to the NYPD with relevant information about the number of shots fired, a map of the location, and if the shooter was moving.
That's a Twitter feed you want.
Wow.
See, it seems like that sending it to an operator introduces, you know, it's going to slow things down a fair bit if someone has to listen to the file and then, was that a gunshot? Was it a car door slamming?
I think it's interesting but that there are people who can tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
In cities around the country, according to the chief of police in New York City, Mr. Bratton, William Bratton, in 75% of the cases, they're not dialed into 9/11.
75%.
Yeah. Because people go exactly that. Oh, it must have been a firework or backfire.
For some reason, I'm now thinking of the Batman scene where he has all the cell phones up on a screen and you can listen to any conversation. And then I'm sure they're not working on that.
Oh, no. You know? They would never do that. Yeah. That would not.
This is fine.
This is just gunshots.
Yeah, only gunshots.
If they happen to hear anything else, they can just throw that out.
They would ignore it, sure.
It's a good point, Matthew. They now have an array of microphones in every borough of Manhattan, of New York.
Like if you said stick them up or, you know.
No. They we'll send that to an operator to determine how serious you were. That's a good point. They have microphones now recording constantly every all over New York.
Yeah, they're listening to us.
Well, they are.
Story.
Yeah, well, this is sensor. I mean, there are going to be sensors of all kinds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, just everybody's phone is going to be listening to these kinds of things. And
if you could get Google Fiber, wouldn't you subscribe in a heartbeat?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Why is it that only 29,867 people have subscribed?
No, that's for the TV package.
Oh, that's the TV.
I think that's what that story
says. You're right.
Says,
isn't it is. That's right, what
okay,
it is.
Okay, yes.
I misunderstood. They don't say what the penetration is for the internet. So they have almost 30,000 TV subs. So Google Fiber is in Stanford. They're conducting a trial in Connecticut, in Kansas City, Kansas, Kansas City, Missouri, Provo, Utah. Number one city, Kansas City, Missouri. They've been there the longest, 20,000 subs. Then Kansas, 7,000 subs. It goes down pretty quickly. Provo, which is, they've only been there for a couple of years, 2,507. And 194 users in Stanford. Huh. But the penetration is not great. Only 13% in Kansas City subscribe to the Google TV. 13% of the Google Internet subscribers. I guess that's less. I thought that was Google Internet. That's less interesting than I thought.
And if you're going to sign up for a wire-cutting, no cable TV, who are you going to sign up with? You're going to sign up with Google.
Right. Well, if I had Google Fiber, I'd sign up for their TV.
Yeah, I would too.
But I guess only 10% did.
So why isn't it higher then?
Yeah, that's a good question. Is it not a good deal?
Well, I think at first they didn't have all the channels. That, you know, it was a rollout issue, I think.
Yeah, that's what it is. Scooter X is saying no AMC on Google Fiber, no deal. That makes sense. You can't get Mad Men. Don't want it. You're going to keep your cable. You also have to put down a $300 deposit, it says.
Google Fiber channel lineup in Kansas City. Let's see. I can't tell where it's at. So what would you call AMC? Entertainment?
I don't know. American Movie Channel? Sounds like entertainment to me.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it here.
Does it have the Hallmark Channel?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'm signing up for that. Jesus, treacle and trickle.
That sounds like one of your reviews, treacle and trickle.
Well, in fact, Hallmark got so mad at me when I was at People Magazine reviewing. They pulled all their ads from People Magazine. And believe me, People Magazine had a lot of Hallmark ads.
Wow. What's wrong with you, Jeff?
I'm just a growly cuss.
Yeah. Google Code is shutting down. This kind of saddens me. According to one of the members of the team, when we started Google Code, there was a real need for this. It was SourceForge and nothing. He said, this is really a risk. The open source community is at this great risk. If SourceForge, I don't know what's going on. Let me close this. If SourceForge shuts down, you know, all these open source projects will be out of luck. So they created Google Code. But now he says there's so many places you can create and host an open source project. There's no need for Google Code. So there's GitHub, but that's a commercial project. It launched in 2006, so there'd be an alternative to SourceForge since then. Quote, we've seen a wide variety of better project hosting services such as GitHub and Bitbucket bloom. Many projects moved away from Google Code to those other systems to meet developers where they are. We ourselves migrated nearly 1,000 of our own open source projects from Google Code to GitHub.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's no point in keeping it going if
right
users are going somewhere else.
So there is a Google code to GitHub exporter tool. Problem with GitHub is it's a for-profit business, right? You're still somebody else hosting your stuff. Well, so
it is pretty cool though.
GitHub?
Have you been to their headquarters?
I love GitHub. GitHub's headquarters? No.
It's amazing because they have this the World Economic Forum held an event there in San Francisco, and they have a replica of the Oval Office as their entrance way.
You're kidding.
Oh, no, no, no. They have all this crazy stuff. They have a huge bar, and the founders, you know, serve from it. And there's hardly anybody working there because, you know, who better to be virtual than GitHub?
Right.
This is practically empty.
GitHub is pretty awesome.
It is pretty great.
Use it. I install it on most of my computers. And you can do it for more than just programs. You could do it for writing a book. You could use GitHub.
Yeah, actually, I was going to write and never wound up writing about it. But Clay Shirky had an interesting – he posted something basically that was a blog post on GitHub. And I think it was about the demonstrations in China.
The demonstrations in Hong Kong, exactly, Matthew. Yeah, he put tons of photos and stuff. And I was so mad at myself. I thought, ooh, of course Clay would do that first.
And a bunch of people sort of, you know, I forget the term, but, you know, they pointed out things that needed to be changed. And I forked it, but then I didn't know what to do with it. But I still thought it was interesting.
So
this is a dumb question. Do you have to download GitHub?
You need GitHub. Yeah, you need GitHub. Well, no, so you could do it on your Chromebook. You could do it without.
That's what I'm asking. Yeah, you don't
just
need
a site.
Just a site. But it depends how you're going to use it. So, for instance, I put on my Mac, I put GitHub software. So if I'm writing software, I can put it up on GitHub. And even if you're if you're multiple people, then that's very useful because it really is a version control system. So you can check in and check out changes to the code so they don't conflict.
There's ZenHub for GitHub on the Chrome Web Store.
Yeah, I'm sure there's ways to do it. But
and that's what's interesting about using it for text is that version control, anyone who's ever tried to collaborate with people using, you know, Microsoft Word, or it just makes you want to put a bullet in your head. And GitHub is really great at tracking, you know, who's got different versions of the file, what changes have been made, condensing them all into one file. It works for code. Should work for words.
Yeah. I remember when my first book that I was going to do with Gina Smith, we were going to use SVN, which was the very common way to do this in those days. GitHub is also, you can use it for free. So you don't, I think that's interesting, though, that Clay used that for that's wild.
Yeah, it is. Damn him.
Did he do that again, or was that it?
I don't know that it was the one again, but he didn't need to.
Right,
he got his cool merit badge.
Wow!
But he didn't come up with a cool term for what it like. He didn't make up a new word for what that is. So
it's
you
publishing.
Can still do that.
Get publishing.
I think Matthew, I get publishing.
Get publishing. Wow! Google Flight Search has gotten even more useful. We talked about this actually on the radio show with our travel expert. It now has Route Happy information, so you can see what flight amenities you will get.
Mm-hmm.
We are in an airline tomorrow called Spirit. You ever hear of them?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are so few amenities on Spirit, you actually have to pay to carry on a bag.
Yeah, that's becoming more common.
And if you don't pay ahead of time, it's $100. If you just show up with your carry-on, it's $100.
What do they charge you to check it?
I think it was 25 bucks, something like that. It was $200 for four of us.
Just show up late with a big bag and they'll gate check it for nothing.
No, I don't think Spirit does that. I don't think there's nothing for nothing on Spirit.
They'll leave it on the gangway.
Oh, I'm so sorry, sir. Your bags won't be going with you.
At one point, Ryanair was talking about charging people for the bathroom on the plane.
Yeah. They fortunately decided they thought better of that. Thank goodness. Did you see what Danny Sullivan reporting this one on Search Engine Land? What happens now if you use Google Search and Firefox?
No.
It says, switch your default, a big banner, switch your default search engine to Google. Learn how.
It's a little desperate for Google.
Wow.
A little bit, yeah.
Did Firefox change to Bing? Is that what happened? Yahoo is Bing.
Yahoo.
Yeah.
Yahoo via Bing, right.
Wow. I'm going to have to, I don't use Firefox, but I'll have to give it a try. Switch your default search engine. Wow. They must cost them a lot of money. That they're not.
Those default search deals are big money.
Yeah. Yeah, because the tyranny of the default. Wow.
Well, and he says that since the deal, Yahoo search share rose, wow, that's like 2 points, 2 percentage points.
Yeah. Yahoo making money on anything is a story.
Yeah, anything going upward is. Wait, it's going up? That's not right.
What's this? I don't understand. Maybe you can explain this to me, Jason. This is kind of all, we're doing the change log kind of ad hoc here. You could send a Hangouts message with your voice in Google Now? What does that mean?
That means that you can do a voice command inside Google Now to send a message through search. You could do it with SMS, right, before. Now you can do it with a Hangout message.
That's a cool idea.
Okay, Google. Send a Hangout message to Jason Howell. So it'll...
Is it?
No such user.
Okay, no, I found him. Which account? Yeah. Okay.
Don't know what it'll show.
Okay, good. Don't show that.
Yeah.
What's the message? Hey, Jason, it's Leo. I'm over here.
Get to work.
Now I have to type it.
Oh, did it not?
What?
Well, if I'd done the whole thing, it probably would have done.
Yeah.
But that's cool. So... That's as opposed to, say, send a message would do SMS.
Right.
Send a Hangout message, we'll send it via Hangouts.
Exactly.
Got it. Mm. I don't know if that's a big thing or not.
Mm. I have to say, neat. The easier they can make it to start a Hangout, the better. Because I felt like an 87-year-old man when I tried to start a Hangout with somebody.
I don't do Hangouts.
I literally could not figure out how to do it.
I know.
How to send them a Hangout. I'm like, I can't figure it out. You do it.
It's begun, Matthew.
I don't want to hang out.
I'm wearing bow ties, and you're going, what's this Hangout all about?
Why don't we just get on the phone?
In my day, we'd send it by Pony Express. We mentioned that the new Pixel is using a Type-C USB connector like the soon-to-appear MacBook. John Gruber has decided that Apple invented the Type-C connector. Which has caused an interesting lash and backlash. A lot of tech blogs picked up Gruber's assertion and asserted the same. Then a lot of other people said, no, wait a minute. Google actually put out a video. Here's the Google Type-C video. It doesn't say we invented it, but they kind of imply, you know, it was... Here, let me turn on the audio.
Allows us to deliver power, data, display over one connector, one cable, and one port.
It's about the same size as a micro USB connector, but it's good for up to 100 watts, super high-speed data, and allows you to output 4K display over it.
It's a pretty cool idea. We worked with the industry to come up with this standard. See, there's an engineer drawing on a whiteboard, so it did come from Google.
Generally, plugs are made with stamped parts that are then formed into the shape that you want them to be. We decided to use a deep draw process, which is taking a flat sheet of metal and pressing it into the right shape.
By the way, the same technique used to make the Apple Watch.
So you make it much harder and much stronger. We designed the connector to have a symmetric...
And your coffee mug.
Okay. And B-52 tires. But okay. So I do like the Type-C. I'll have to say it's kind of hard to get out. It isn't. It doesn't just... Well, it doesn't fall out. It's harder to get out than a micro USB connection. But I love it that it goes either way.
You're getting weak in your old age.
Another thing. It's so hard to disconnect my laptop now.
Why don't the plugs come out?
Why don't they fall out easier? I don't like this.
Did you ever wonder why?
I am turning into Andy Rooney. It's true. It's true. So Google has decided to pay a little more attention to the app submissions in the Play Store. Humans will now review. This is kind of an Apple-y response. I don't know what this means. App submissions on Google Play now reviewed by staff and will include age-based ratings. That has to be a huge new department. I mean,
what happened before? I mean, they wouldn't put up malware in the App Store. How did they determine what was... How did they determine before just was the basic standards they had, which were technological standards?
They probably had some... I wonder if they had some bouncer. Automated...
Bouncer algorithms. Was what that was called. Yeah. It was a security kind of thing going on, automatic security, scanning for known... known potential threats.
So they
and then as the new ones would be discovered, they'd add to that. And, Verify Apps runs on Android. You can have that kind of check every app install on it, and it compares it against that list. This is something different. It's actually been going on for 2 months now, undetected. And Google is just now announcing it, saying, and we've been doing it for 2 months, and, you guys haven't noticed yet. So
there's going to be E for everyone, G for general.
Oh yeah, the ratings, right?
What is it varies by region.
Is there an R?
There's M for mature. So in the US, E, T, and M, which is just like gaming, everyone, teen, and mature. Other countries will do it the way they do whatever it is, games or movies.
I wonder if they were getting flack for kids installing things that weren't age appropriate, or
I don't know. There isn't anything that sexy on
Well,
Google.
I mean, Google just in general, as of late, has been paying a lot more attention to kind of the kid angle of things, right? YouTube for YouTube Kids, restricted profiles in Android, all that kind of stuff. So I think this kind of falls in line. And they modeled this rating system, from what I understand, closely to the MSRB that already kind of exists in video games.
ESRB.
ESRB.
Yeah, that's the video game race. Now, it does sound like it's somewhat up to the developer, because they have a questionnaire the developer fills out, and then they determine the rating based on that. So it's still not a heavily manual process. But it is, I think, there was just a published study about the Freak exploit that showed that, so what Freak is we talked about security now if you want to get all the details, but the idea of Freak is it's a downgrade of encryption that a man-in-the-middle attack can force by sending certain crafted packets so that when you have an encrypted connection, you can have really weak encryption. This was encryption that was created when the U.S. government 20 years ago banned export of encryption. Remember that? So they allowed 512-bit encryption, which is just no good. It's easily cracked. But most SSL suites apparently continue to support this very low grade encryption, just in case they meet somebody that only can do it that way. They shouldn't. And operating systems are being patched. Android has been patched. iOS has been patched, so that they no longer allow downgrade to that low a level. But if you're using an older version of Android or an older version of iOS, and you install one of these malicious apps on your system, you could be vulnerable to getting freaked. That would allow a bad guy to see all your encrypted traffic, including credit cards, passwords, so forth. So FireEye, which is the security firm that did this research, came up with 1,999 titles that left users open to this encryption downgrade attack. But this is the interesting thing. 1,228 were on Android. 771 were on iOS. So it's not like – I think a lot of times people think that I'm using an Apple, I'm safe. Not a lot safer. So the big takeaway is update your operating system. Now, that's easy with Apple because unless you have a fairly old device, you can easily go to the latest version of iOS. 8.2 has been patched against Freak. What version of Android? 5.02? Not sure when they patched it.
I'm not sure on that.
But that will leave out. I mean, my Note 4 is still at KitKat, so that will leave some people out. So be careful, I guess, about what apps you download, and update your operating system as soon as you can. To test if browsers are vulnerable, visit the SSL Labs page, and it'll tell you, freakattack.com. Uh-oh, let me do that. Everybody now do that on your Android device, freakattack.com.
.com.
Yeah. Now I'm curious.
What's it going to do?
Well, it won't do anything bad. It'll just tell you if you're vulnerable.
It will install the
It will attempt to warning your browser. Okay. There you go. Your browser is vulnerable to the Freak attack. It could be tricked into using weak encryption if you visit a vulnerable website. So you have to go, you have to have out-of-date operating system or browser. You have to visit a vulnerable website, and you have to have software on your, well, I guess this browser is vulnerable, I guess is what it's saying.
But doesn't your Chrome update itself automatically?
I thought it did.
Freakattack.com?
Must be, yeah. See what I think it's the what does your Nexus 6 say? It should be all right. This is let me try it with a Samsung browser.
Good news, your browser appears to be safe from the freak attack.
So you're it's an OS late level update, it must be.
Mine is vulnerable.
You too.
I feel vulnerable.
I'm so open. So I've be careful. Violent.
Wow. Popular sites that are susceptible to freak attack. NPR.org. Airtel. Kohl's.com. MIT.edu. Who put this site out?
Twit, by the way. Oh, this is good. This is SSL Labs. It's reliable. Yeah, the Samsung browser is also vulnerable. So I'm happy to say Twit is not. Twit.tv and TechGuyLabs.com both have been updated for... the vulnerability.
Who, Matthew, just joking. what? On top of everything else, freak attack. Who did this site?
The one that I'm sending you to? SSL Labs. It's a reliable.
It is. Okay.
It's a firm that does SSL testing. And wow, yeah, look at all of these. Holy cow.
I just tested it on my Nexus 6 that I got yesterday, and it's vulnerable, but I'm installing the Chrome update now. So now I'm going to check it again and see what it says.
Yeah. Oh, so they
before and after.
So your credit card company came through, huh, and got you a new one?
Yes, and I finally received it.
Yay.
It's true.
Yay.
Yeah, it's about time.
Okay, so that's good to know. The freak attack is possible when a vulnerable browser connects to a susceptible web server. So the key is upgrade your browser.
But hey, I'm updating right now.
Yeah, maybe I need to update too.
Yeah, the update fixed it.
Everybody,
are you using the Chrome beta or?
I'm not in the Chrome beta.
You're on the Chrome main channel.
Main channel.
Well,
I think I'm in the beta.
Why didn't I get an update?
Actually, you know what? And if I very well may be in the beta, actually, because if I did that, I probably did it a couple of years ago. Right. And at this point, I've just forgotten.
Who knows? Yeah.
But no, I mean, I checked before the update and I was vulnerable. After the update, I'm good.
Cool.
Okay, if my Skype slows down, it's because I'm.
I do. I see a Chrome browser update. Lots of bug fixes is all they say, but I bet you that's exactly one of them. So I'm going to update my browser and I'll let you know. So there you go. Interesting. In the UK, there's a Google tax.
There is indeed. What's 25%.
What?
There's an everything
of
tax.
What? I'm not exactly clear. But yes, this is the political move. It's the new budget. And they've been threatening this. You know, Google's avoiding taxes. Well, the law, they're doing what's legal. So now they're going to say, well, we're going to tax you anyway.
What is the tax?
It's a 25% tax on, how are they determining
it? Diverted profits. This is to avoid the Dutch sandwich
and the Irish turnaround or whatever. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And, you know, once again, and the thing is, if it's discriminatory and aimed at only, you know, one or two companies, that's.
It's the you're too big and make too much money tax.
You damned Yankees.
Wow. Apple, Amazon, Facebook, and Google, 25% tax on the profits. That's higher than the general 20% corporate tax.
You see, and yes, come on. You know, what's it's discriminatory.
Yeah. It's unclear how easy it will be to actually implement this tax. And of course, yeah, how do they know? And who, so it's not everybody that has to pay it?
How can you legally do that?
That seems... Just certain companies have to pay a higher tax. All right, we're going to get out of here because
I'm fine for a while.
Yeah, but Matthew has to go. So I don't want to live here.
Don't stop just for me.
Tired of us?
I will stop just for you. Well, no, actually, we're done. We've gone right through it.
We've gone through everything. Yeah, this was not a heavy week. I've got to say
no. Although Microsoft is developing, here's one more story, software that converts Android phones to Windows 10. Is that malware? Is that something? What is that? Yeah.
That's the definition of malware.
Is this something somebody would choose to do?
Why would someone want that?
It's testing Windows 10 with power users of the Mi 4, which is an Android smartphone. The initiative, which Xiaomi, who makes the Mi 4, stressed, is not a partnership.
That's a nice clause.
So apparently you can... It effectively overrides Android, turning the Xiaomi phone into a Windows 10 device complete with Microsoft services. What? This is a story from TechCrunch by John Russell. What? The software does not offer a dual boot option. This is a ROM based on Windows that it's like Cyanogen or some other ROM. Wow, you could just put on your phone.
Super great idea.
What? That's one way to get people to make Windows phones. So here's the latest. Here's an update from Microsoft. As part of the Windows Insider program, Microsoft will partner with Xiaomi to offer Windows 10 free downloads to a select group of Mi 4 owners. You will be able to flash your phones with the new Windows 10 OS and provide feedback. So you're not getting like the current version. You're getting like the future version, which is fairly...
So it's a beta testing.
It's probably a beta testing on another platform. Sounds like it's Xiaomi only, though, right? Mm. This headline implies more than just Xiaomi, but as far as I can tell, it's just the Mi 4.
And Xiaomi says, we're not a partner.
But we're not this a partner.
Not a partnership.
I'll just let you know.
What is it then?
Well, you know, what the hell?
Why are you doing it?
We like that Satya Nadella fellow. We thought, all right, go ahead. Knock yourself out. That's a surprise. Well, what's of interest is that technically it's possible. If it's possible, others will do it.
Mm-hmm.
It will be, you know, you'll get your new boot manager, and among other things in your Android phone, you boot it and install a new recovery partition, and among other things, it'll say, okay, now you can install Cyanogen Mod 12 or Windows 10. Wow. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That it's even posspossible. Our show today brought to you by Lynda.com. Probably the guys who developed that were studying programming at Lynda.com. That's what I'm thinking. Lynda, actually, a lot of people... Lynda.com is for anybody who wants to learn. Problem solvers. Maybe you're just curious. Or maybe you want to get a better job. Take better photos. Master Excel. Build a website. Boost your Photoshop skills. At Lynda, you can learn most anything. Lynda.com. Over 3,000 on-demand video courses on all of the tools everybody's using. For instance, if you want to learn how to write mobile software, there are courses on Android Studio, Essential Training. That's neat. That's the new IDE that Google's just started to give away. Swift Essentials Training, the new Apple programming language. There's also courses, well, there's one called Building a Note-Taking App for Android. Be a great way to get started. Or iOS, or Windows Phone, where they teach you how to create a mobile app on each platform from start to finish. I love that. Lynda.com. And by the way, the teachers are great teachers, but they're also practitioners. They're people who do this day-to-day, the greatest photographers, Photoshop. You're learning Photoshop from Burt Monroy. You're learning from the best in the business. Passionate, top experts in their field. Thousands of courses. You learn at your own schedule, at your own pace. You can go, see how it's chunked up into small chunks, so you can watch a little bit here, watch a little bit there. There's full transcriptions, so you can literally search to the part you want, download the tutorials, and watch them on the go, including access on iOS and Android. Create and save playlists of courses you want to watch. Customize your learning path. Lisa was doing Photoshop this morning at breakfast. So cool. Stay up to date. Lynda.com works with software companies to prepare courses ahead of time, so they're available right when the new version ships. New Lightroom comes out, there's going to be a Lynda course. When the new Logic Pro 10 came out, man, immediately Lynda courses. Same with Photoshop. Same with Final Cut. Your Lynda.com membership also gives you unlimited access to all the courses, so that's nice. Whether you're looking to become an expert, you're passionate about a hobby, or you just want to learn something new, Lynda, Lynda.com/twig, a free 10-day trial awaits. 10 days, that's enough to really sample the wares and decide if this is something for you. It's great. Lynda, Lynda.com/twig, 10-day free trial awaits. Matthew, at this time on the show, we like to offer a free tip or tool. You don't have to, but if you have something.
You know, I was given that some thought before the show, and this is probably going to come as not news to lots of people in the chat room and lots of viewers and listeners, but I got a Chromecast. I think it was for Christmas, and I've just started using it a lot. Like, I played around with it, and I used the backdrop feature to show photos and whatnot, but I didn't find a sort of compelling use case other than my daughter trying to show me the latest funny YouTube video on the TV. But I set up a Plex server, and now I'm basically just streaming Plex through the Chromecast. So the Plex server is somewhere else. Pull it up on my phone. Plex has Chromecast support built in through the Chromecast to the TV. It's fantastic. Take the Chromecast with me, throw it in a pocket. You know, I'm in a hotel or somewhere. Just streaming.
Doesn't the Chromecast have to be on the same Wi-Fi as you?
It does. It has to be, yes. So the Wi-Fi, it works great in the house, but as long as you're...
Hotels?
I'm trying to think of whether I've
There's
actually used it in a hotel.
There's this new thing that they said they were going to do. I don't know if they've done it yet, where you wouldn't have to have access...
Be on the same Wi-Fi?
Talking about that.
Yeah, so weird sound thing that they were doing that you would somehow... I can't remember how it worked. I don't know if that's come out.
So maybe it wouldn't work in a hotel.
I haven't tried it in a hotel.
You need to try that. Okay. And there's something else new about the Chromecast.
I'm excited about this. Yeah, Yanko Records.
Oh, the remote control thing.
Yanko.
I wrote about that.
Yanko decided, I'm going to keep writing. I don't care. So he's writing on Medium. This is an example of somebody. Am I saying his name right, by the way?
Yanko. Yeah.
Rutgers or Rutgers?
Rutgers.
Former GigaOM guy. He decided, I'm just going to write it on Medium. Who cares? This is exactly what it would have been like if he'd written it on GigaOM. It's a great article. Nice job. Mm-hmm. So because Chromecast supports something called CEC, now your TV may use a different name for it. I think my Samsungs call it AnyLink. But CEC is an extension of HDMI that lets you send control commands between your TV and an attached device. So in my case, when I turn on my TV, it turns on my receiver using CEC and vice versa. It tells it, okay, you handle the audio, that kind of thing. Well, it turns out in the latest firmware upgrade to Chromecast 27946, support for CEC was added to the Chromecast, which means that you should try it. But the TV remote you have already for maybe your Blu-ray or your TV might work with Chromecast.
Yeah, you should be able to switch to the Chromecast, and it can switch inputs on your TV and start streaming.
And you can press pause. Or play.
But your TV has to support it.
Your TV and your remote have to work and so forth. I haven't tried it yet, but that's fantastic. And Yanko got this from the Chromecast Reddit subreddit, Reddit r Chromecast. So actually a good place to go is to this subreddit, Ready to Cast, and they have lists of things that work and, you know, what people have been using. And works with my Samsung TV, pause and play on BBC iPlayer is working. Bravia TV, play and return seem to work. Pause does not. So it really has something to do with how it's implemented on your TV and so forth. So it's kind of cool. So try it, I guess. You know, you can use your phone and your Android device as a remote, but it's nice to have a remote, and they don't come with a Chromecast. Jeff, you're...
I'm going to go with the number two. A nice little, Eric Schmidt told this story at South by Southwest. The Washington Post has the first person story of this. A Google Translate love story. Two lovebirds met in Haiti, an American and a Frenchman. And he spoke no English, but they were attracted to each other and used Google Translate.
Wow.
And that's awesome. And finally moved in to get married. When I was in Madrid last week, it was quite amazing that I was I was sitting through these presentations in Spanish. I didn't understand a word, but they had PowerPoint. So I would point my Google Translate phone app at this PowerPoint screen, and it would translate from Spanish into English pretty damn well and incredibly fast. It's amazing. Before long, we're going to have simultaneous audio translation on Google Translate. I'll betcha.
I hope the divorce lawyer has Google Translate. No, I'm just kidding. That was cynical. It would get tiresome after a while going, I love you. I love you. Te amo.
Je t'aime.
Je t'aime. That's so. Two is the number. Two people.
You stole two of my other numbers, so I went with one I had.
Oh, I did? I'm sorry.
None of the numbers were any good. I thought the cube of speed was interesting, but I didn't know what it meant. So
two is good. I like two.
Two.
So we showed you the Earth View extension from Google Maps that was really cool, that when you add a new tab to Google Chrome, a blank page, it would show you a random satellite view from Google Maps. It was called Earth View, and I still recommend it. It's free from Google. But they've released another one that's cool, too. So you remember every time I had a tab, I'd have a neat satellite view? Now, every time I have a new tab, I have a great work of art in all my new tabs. And it's kind of fun. And it doesn't just have to be great works of art. This extension is the Google Cultural Institute. And you can choose what it is that shows up. And how often it shows up and things like that. It's an extension. It's a silly extension. But, you know, on the Chromebook, you can't, like, rotate wallpapers and stuff, which I kind of miss. I like the idea of having different desktop wallpapers. But this kind of solves it, because every time you do a new tab in Google Chrome, you get kind of a new full-screen thing. So let me show you. There was the Earth View.
On Chromecast, the backdrop thing where you can show your photos, you know, it mixes in my photos with art. Just Google photos. So art shows up and NASA photos show up. And then you can just say, okay, Google, what's on my Chromecast? And it'll tell you about the picture.
Isn't that nice? But you have to leave your TV on, which is kind of a drag.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. So this has it's called Google Art Project. It's an extension for Chrome. And shows you what buttons are there and how often it changes. The default is to change the artwork every day, but I decided to change it every tab. I prefer that. So it's kind of cool.
Oh,
isn't that nice? If you like just having interesting backdrops.
Remember the days of screensavers?
Yeah. It's kind of the opposite of a screensaver. You have to have your screen turned on for this to work. So that is a new Chrome extension. So I'll give you the both. Somebody's saying in the chat room, what's the other one? I like the satellite maps. So that one is called Earth View from Google Maps. And you'll have to choose. I disabled that so I could use Google Art Project. But if I get tired of that, I just disable Google Art Project, turn the Earth View back on, and now I get more satellite images, which is cool too. These are very beautiful. It's just whether you like
it. That is cool.
Yeah. It's just, you know, because you have the same wallpaper all the time on a Chromebook, it's nice to have something different. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of This Week in Google.
With Andy Rooney.
With Andy Rooney. A bunch of old farts. Great to have you. Great to have you,
Matthew. The three Andys.
Yeah. always a pleasure. Find more at MatthewIngram.com, at Matthew I on Twitter. We wish you the best. Come back soon.
Thank you.
And we'll set up a little thing, so we can help with the college fund.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I think that's only fair. Jeff Jarvis, he's a professor of journalism at City University of New York, CUNY to be exact. He also has written many books. He blogs at BuzzMachine.com. Geek Sparing Gifts is his latest. Much must read.
Going up chapter by chapter on Medium at Geeks-Bearing-Gifts.
Thanks for doing that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we had several Medium stories today.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think.
Great stuff on there.
Starting to think. And it's interesting that Yonko decided to publish on Medium, at least in the interim. It's funny. Well,
it's a great place, you know, if no one goes to your blog or you haven't, you don't have one or you haven't sort of fixed it up. Medium's right there. It's super fast. Writing is really easy. Lots of people see it.
Yeah, I guess so. They even have like a top stories thing, which is kind of cool. So, yeah, there's some discovery there.
Okay, I got to run. Thanks,
Thank Leo. You, Matthew. Thank you, Jeff.
Right, thank you, Matthew. Bye, thank everybody. You.
Thank you all for being here. We do This Week in Google Wednesdays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. That is 2000 UTC at live.twit.tv. Watch live or, you know, get your on-demand after the fact at twit.tv/twig and wherever podcasts are stored. You can subscribe. You make sure you get every week's episode or get one of our great apps. There's Twit apps on all the major platforms. And you can watch and listen anytime you want. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on Twit.